It's a journey with a path. You're going to get bruised. It's going to hurt. You're going to get cuts. People are going to hate you. People are going to say mean things to you. People are not going to buy from you. And you're going to keep looking until you find your way.
All right, Beate, welcome to the Wire to Wire podcast. It's great to have you on.
I'm excited to be here, Yusuf. Let's dive right in.
Yeah, so if you want to start by introducing yourself to the audience, tell them about yourself and what it is that you do.
I'll be happy to. So my name is Beate Chalette. I'm known as the Growth Architect, and I work with a lot of visionaries, thought leaders, people that have often big ideas, and I help them land planes by developing them the process strategies and ideas on how to grow their authority and scale their impact.
Okay, perfect. And you do have quite an impressive resume and a firm understanding of business. And I'm looking forward to the many insightful things that you'll be sharing in this episode. But I want to go back in time for a moment. If you can talk about, your beginnings and then how you actually got started in business.
Yeah, so my origin story begins in Germany. I'm a first generation immigrant, so I grew up and lived in Germany and started my career in Germany. I was always the kid that kind of like, they said a lot, talks a lot in class, and I don't think I behaved as well as I was expected to. And I was also not the smartest. And now looking back, I understand why I wasn't the smartest, because I just don't think that following rules, just doing what everybody else has always done is that appealing to me. But I struggled in school a little bit. And so I went from the higher level school into the middle level school. And then I did an aptitude test. And in the aptitude test, they told me that I should be a roofer because I liked to be outside and I like to carry. I didn't mind carrying stuff. I was young and healthy, and I wasn't afraid of heights. And so the aptitude test came up with something really absolutely idiotic. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with roofing, Yusuf, but it really wasn't exactly my idea of a profession. And from there on, I became a photographer and did work a lot outside, definitely schlepped a lot of gear. And I, there was a moment where I'm on a glacier in Switzerland. And a helicopter brings an Audi Quattro on the mountain. And as the helicopter, comes up the blades and the ch-ch-ch sounds comes. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm outside, I'm schlepping stuff. I'm definitely not afraid of heights. I'm doing exactly what the aptitude test said I should be doing. It just wasn't the right interpretation. From there on, I went into the magazine world. And then I decided to immigrate to the United States. And then my journey here began.
Okay. And coming, from Germany to the US, right? Would you say that there was a bit of like a culture shock for you in terms of having to adapt, or was it kind of a seamless transition for you?
No, there was no seamless transition. It's a huge shock. I think the biggest thing, and it's interesting that you asked this question. I don't think people have asked me this question much before. I remember one of the biggest things that really stood out for me. So in Germany, when you are admitting to a mistake, you are going to be punished. And because then you made the mistake, you admitted to making the mistakes, and then you have to face the consequence. In America, when you say, I made a mistake, people suddenly say, that's okay, we're all human. I'm like, what? What? The wrath of God is not bestowed upon me, and I have to suffer until my children's children's children will be perpetually punished for something that I did do. And people here go like, no, everybody makes a mistake. I'm like, are you serious? So that to me was one of the things that stood out the most, aside from that the portions are way bigger and everybody's louder and takes a lot more space and does think that they live in the greatest country in the world, which aside from France, I have not encountered.
Now that's interesting. That's quite the transition. And so as as I was looking into looking into you and what it is that you do and doing my research, I did come across like a portion of your bio where you mentioned you were a single mother, You just told your story about you immigrating to the US. And at one particular time, you had about 130, over $130,000 in debt. Now, having gone through those obstacles, did they at any point create self-doubt within yourself where you felt unsure about whether or not things were actually going to work out for you?
I think it would be interesting to look at this from the perspective of saying, when you're staring the wolf in the mouth or the bear, you tackle the bear in the campground, that you would not be afraid of. Yes, you are afraid. I was very afraid and very nervous and fearful at a lot of times, at a lot of junctions in my life. If I look at this from the perspective of where I am today, I have a more intellectual understanding of it because I've done a lot of mindset work and a lot of personal development work. And I understand that whenever you need to get to the next level, there is a spiritual law that when you are going to the higher nature of something, you need to leave something of a lower nature behind. So, like an animal eats another animal, eats another animal, eats another animal. And the further you up, the bigger the animal goes, so that the lower level is disappearing for the next level. And when I always explain it like this, when you, let's say you have the beat up Toyota, Yosef, and it's done great, and you love it and it's been really good, but it's time to buy the car, whatever you want, the Tesla, BMW, Audi, Chevy, whatever that might be for you. In order for you to park that car in that parking spot, you're going to have to take that Toyota and you got to let that Toyota go because you're putting that new car in. And there's this area of, man, it's been such a good car. It's treated me really well. Am I doing the right thing? It's so much money for a car. It's still driving. Should I be spending this kind of money on it? But I love the way it makes me feel. I've always wanted one. So you got all this dialogue in it. So it's the same concept. You have to let something go of a lower nature to go to something of a higher nature. And I think that that's just what happens when you are in these moments where you are completely out cold and people don't know this or they don't understand how these laws work, is that when you are in this and you feel that complete sense of loss and hopelessness and fear. And this could be at any time in your life. It could be a divorce. It could be a job. It could be a challenge. It could be not having money. It could be just having made a lot of money. But these things, as you step into that next level of your life, keep coming up. And because you're letting something go, there's fear because you don't know if that next step is going to work. But you have to let that go before that other thing. Between the Toyota and whatever the BMW, there's going to be a period where somebody picks up the Toyota. And there's nothing there before the new car comes in because you can't drive two cars at the same time. And so that's the period to just start to get a little bit more comfortable with. And that's very difficult.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that kind of speaks to like making sacrifices sometimes, right? That to get to that next level in life, you might have to give up something. I think in the book, it's by Napoleon Hill, I believe, but Think and Grow Rich. He says there's no such thing as something for nothing, right? So there is sometimes that trade-off. So for you in your journey, right, what would you say was that momentum shift, right? Like, what would you say was that turning point or that momentum shift that put you on a different trajectory towards, reaching that next level for yourself?
It was really a point that was simple in its concept. It was complete surrender. Because when I was $135,000 in debt and I flew to Germany to visit my dad to drum up some business, my father had a stroke, but my father didn't have a stroke. My father had pancreatic cancer and he dies in 6 weeks. And now I'm at this funeral in Germany of money I don't have. And while I'm at the funeral, I get a phone call from my office in Los Angeles that we've just been served a notice and I'm losing the house. Now, I didn't own the house, but I rented a home with that was large enough so I could run my office. But because the building had been sold, the handshake agreement I had with the previous owner of running a home office was not accepted by the new owner. And so he threw me out while I'm at a funeral in Germany. And there comes this moment where you surrender because you have to look at, I have done everything. I can't work any harder. I can't do anything else. I can't do more. So I have to let this go because it's not my plan anymore. Like I've done everything. There is no more, no bank I can call. There's no money I can make available. There's literally nothing. And you literally have to surrender and said, fine. I can't walk away from this now and say, at least I don't drown in a puddle. I'm gonna drown in the ocean. At least it's worth it. And I surrendered to that idea that I needed to surrender to God, spirit, universe, whatever you want to call it, some other energy, because it was outside of my control. I could not do anything else. And that's when I got a letter from the White House. And I got the letter from the White House because I wrote this letter to the President of the United States back then, because my former mother-in-law was an absolute nag. Write the letter to the President of the United States. He's the number one guy in the country. If anybody can help you, he's the number one guy. Why are you wasting your time with anybody else? Go straight to the president. He's your president too. Have you written your letter yet? Fine. Fine. And I wrote the damn letter. Imagine my surprise when I get a letter from the White House and a phone call from the Small Business Administration, because they go like, who is this nutcase that writes a letter to the president when she could have picked up the phone and called us? Never even occurred to me. And the guy's like, well, I got to meet you in person because that is ballsy or unusual or stupid or whatever or idiotic or brilliant. And so I walked in and I was fully prepared. I had written a business plan. I'd done the work, as I said. And then he says, I put in what you put in. And they helped me find a bank that was restructuring my $135,000 in debt into a 10-year fixed loan that freed up my line of credit. That brought me to break even 3 months later. So between bankruptcy and break even was 3 months. This is how close I was. And then 18 months later, I'm the world leader in my category. And then a Bill Gates company comes and says, wow, this looks really awfully good what you're doing. Can you tell us how you did it? And I'm like, no. You want it, you buy it. And I said, oh, there's a thought. How much do you want? Is that a couple million? And then they said, fine.
So that's wow, that is interesting. In the grand scheme of things, shout out to your mother-in-law for putting that idea into your head. But you touched on something that I kind of want to go over. So you mentioned that you had a company that Bill Gates or a company of Bill Gates was looking to buy. So before we get into the details of that sale in particular, if you could talk a little bit about what was the business that you actually sold.
Yeah, of course, I'd be happy to. So my business was a stock photography syndication, which means that I took existing images that the world's best photographer in the architecture and interior and design world took, and I resold them or relicensed them worldwide. My claim to fame was that because I had gone after the A-listers, I have made sure that I wasn't going to waste my time on B or C. And when people tell you, just start on a lower level and then work yourself up, don't do that. Start at the top level. Because if you do A, B, and C is going to tag along because they're going to want to be where everybody else is. And as a side note, what happened is that they then had the worked with the best architects and the best interior designers in the world. And they get the jobs from celebrities and the wealthiest people in the world because they're the A-listers. And so next thing I know, I get home stories from Julianne Moore, Seal, Madonna, Francis Ford Coppola. And then these photographers said, well, can you help us resell those? Well, I was an editor at Elle magazine in Germany. I used to buy them. Well, of course I knew how to sell them. So I built up a worldwide syndication. And because of my background and because I understood what people were looking for and the value of these celebrity images, I became the world leader in that category very quickly.
Oh, that's impressive. And when you sold your company to Bill Gates, how did that deal come to be? Like, was it something that you were planning for from the inception of this company, or was it kind of something that just happened by happenstance, so to speak?
I like this question a lot because people have this idea that they're going to build something and then suddenly out of the woods, somebody stumbles into your front lawn and says, Yusuf, this looks amazing. Can I throw a couple million dollars at you? Will you please, please tell me your business? And then you say, well, I wasn't really thinking about it, but okay, fine, because you want it so badly. That's not the way this works. When you are building a business, you need to be very clear what your exit strategy is, and you need to know your number because nobody is going to find a diamond in the raw by accident. They go looking at a mine or at an area where there's known to be diamonds. And if you are diving for the pearl and the oyster, you go dive somewhere where you know there's oysters. You don't just randomly jump somewhere in the ocean. So you have to have some sort of a plan on what it is that you're doing. And so I had a number and I had a very clear strategy that I wanted to get to a certain point and then sell my business for a particular number that meant that I would never have to work again.
Okay. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that you do mention that about the exit strategy because, like, from stuff that I've heard and I've read, particularly in Silicon Valley, is that one of the primary questions that investors are always asking companies is, what is your exit strategy?
100%.
So, I mean, you kind of mentioned this already. So, do you think the concept that you're mentioning, right, of having that exit strategy. Is that something that is applicable for specific industries, or do you think it's something that is applicable all across the board?
It's applicable for every industry because what's changed a little bit today is that when I sold my business, there were not a lot of exits. Today, it's very common. I mean, I know myself, a lot of people that have sold multiple businesses. And the way the people are strategic about this is that they're building something that is very much designed for somebody else to look at it and to acquire it. I'm working right now with someone who has a brilliant idea on how to update the interview process. And he developed a video format for that, which is so genius that when he came to me and he said, well, do you think there's a market for this? I've been thinking about this. And I said, this is a $100 million SaaS idea. He says, are you serious? I said, it will change the way the world interviews. I said, a LinkedIn's going to want to buy this, and Indeed's going to want to buy this. So as we're building this, we're going to build this specifically to target the space that others don't have. So we are not going out and being the job board for job description, although you could build that and say, I want to be acquired just to be taken off the market. But it's better, and that's a strategy. Or you say, I have a piece of the pie or the puzzle. These guys desperately need to have a better product, which is what happens after the Indeed resume comes. Would there be a way to make that better? And then that becomes a very sellable idea, and it's going to be a very quickly sellable idea. I think he just needs to get to a prototype proof of concept, and I think he'll be already able to sell that thing.
I'll probably be hearing about this in Forbes the next year or so, perhaps.
If I have anything to do with it, yes.
I'll be keeping my eyes and ears open. So I really I liked what I like the conversation so far, and I think you're in a great and unique position to be able to answer this next question that I have for you. Because you did mention, obviously you're an entrepreneur and that you're also had a stock photography company, right? So you definitely have that creative element to your entrepreneurship. So sometimes creatives, they can have this attachment, to the work that they do, right? And they seem to prioritize owning their work for various reasons, right? Whether it's, they just value ownership, whether it's for their legacy or having that passive income that it provides, whatever the case may be. But there's this attachment. And you also said something earlier that I found to be very profound about shedding things to get to that next level, right? So, from your experience and your knowledge, what do you find to be more beneficial? Maintaining ownership or being able to sell it for the maximum amount that it can possibly generate someone on the market?
Depends on the business model. I'm working with a company that is a clothing recycling company. And I truly believe that in this particular industry, there is an industry leadership position available for this particular company. And the goal of this particular company is a family-owned business. That's their value. That's what they value. They want to build this so that the kids, the cousins, the uncles, the brother or sister, all over the world, there's somebody here, somebody there, somebody there. There's somebody here in Los Angeles. That's their model. They are probably not going to sell that because that's not the model that is designed. And they are not looking at this from an exit strategy. They're looking at this from a legacy perspective. And it has no other reason than that's the model. And that's my job as a business strategy and consultant to get that clear when they come in the door and say, well, what are you trying to build? And when I talk to somebody who says, I want to make sure my family is taken care of, and then their family is taken care of, and then their family is taken care of, then we build this very, very different. Then we build a business that where somebody says, you know, like in this other example I had where we want to build a SaaS product that we could, of course, bring to the market as its own SaaS product, but who needs another SaaS product? It would be better if that was already incorporated in another person's SaaS product. So we build it that way that it could be so that it has the validity, but that somebody can say, oh, it's already a SaaS product. We have a SaaS product. All we do is bring that over here and we're good to go. And then that is set up for that. So the question isn't so much, is it better or not? It is, the question is, what do you want? What matters to you? Some people want to cash out. Some people want to make sure their families are taken care of. Some people want to make sure that they are, it's a lifestyle business. Some people want to get there the fastest possible way and then never work for the rest of their lives again. It really depends. Some people go like, I want to, you know, find a formula and keep repeating that over and over again. The question isn't so much what's better, but what's right for you. And for that, you need to work with somebody who can help you to figure that out.
Now that makes sense. And yeah, that's a good response, that because that definitely reframes the way that I was kind of viewing it. And you know, obviously for someone such as yourself who sold the business, who now consults with different businesses, right? One of the common things that we always hear is that, you know, it's just business, it's nothing personal. But at the same time, we do know that in practice, a lot of like business, a huge portion of it is relationship based, right? So, from your experience, you know, how important is it to create, cultivate, and maintain relationships when it comes to business?
So this is really a two-sided sword, if you so want to. So one side of this is relationships are everything. You are going to be judged by your relationships. Unless you want your tombstone to say, here he lies alone. And it may not say anything, and you may not have a funeral because nobody gives a damn, because you were such a dork or a jerk that nobody wants to be around you, and nobody shows up for your funeral. So you're just some ash on some ground and you're forgotten. That's what that means when you do it by yourself. So relationships are everybody because our legacy lives in the eyes of other people. So you have to make a decision on whether or not that's important to you. And the other portion of these types of things always are, again, it goes back to what is it that you want? What is it that you want? What matters to you? And business is personal, but then it isn't. And then Matt Ryder gives me this great example that I interviewed on my show, the Business Growth Architect Show. And he says, when you go in the supermarket and you pick up an avocado, you look at the avocado, and then you put the avocado down and you walk out without buying the avocado. So the store manager is going to run after you and says, why did you insult me like that? How dare you not take my avocado? I can't feed my family. My staff is insulted. This has been the worst experience of my life. Says nobody ever. You know, you just didn't want to make guacamole. You thought about it. You looked at the avocado. You said, "Ma, I don't feel like it. Too much work." You put it down. You haven't even given me another thought. That's not personal. That's a personal decision you made. It's not against the avocado, and it's not against the store or the person who put the avocado on the floor. So I think we need to get very clear about some of these decisions are because people are just not there, and they are. There's no urgency for them to make a decision. The pain point is not big enough. I always say people only move when the pain is greater than the fear of change. Or they are okay with where they are at. And so that part is not personal. That's on them. The part that is personal, you staying in touch and building these relationships and making sure that you know your stuff so that you can make them see the consequence of their inaction, or even understand what happens if they don't take these actions. I was on a podcast today and somebody said to me, "Well, what would you tell people?" I said, "I would say, what are you waiting for? Like, what, when is one day? Is there a day in 365 days when you get to that page on the calendar where it says one day? Because I still have yet to find that day that says today is that day. Today is one day. People go like, well, I don't think today is the day. Well, there is no such thing as the day. It doesn't exist. The day is when you say it is the day. And that's why people stay stagnant where they are, because they go, well, let me pray on that a little bit more. Well, you already prayed on that. And you said, this is what I want. Should I do that? And God said, or spirit, universe, whatever you believe in, said, that's a great idea. You go. And then you pray again and you said, are you sure? This is a really good idea. So you keep asking the same questions over and over and over again. And guess what? You're going to get the same answer. Because the question should be, what's my first step? What do I need to do? Where do I need to lead in? Show me the first person that's going to help me to get to that goal. And then your nagging mother-in-law shows up and says, write a letter to the president of the United States. And you go like, not that.
Yeah.
Or the Toyota shows up and you go, not a Toyota. I was expecting a Bentley. Or a bicycle that you have to repair first shows up and you say, no. That's our problem, is that we judge because we think that we're in charge of the path, and we're never in charge of the path. We just, our job is to ask for it and then look at what comes at us. And on a very personal example, I'm going through a massive transformation right now myself, and I'm experiencing feelings that I haven't had in a long time, heavy stuff, and I'm feeling anxious. I haven't been anxious in 30 years. I mean, I thought I worked through all my stuff, and boom, here it is. But it is because I choose to do a spiritual journey at the end of the year. And I think it's my subconscious throwing everything at me to not have to go there. I'm sitting here, I'm having a cough, I'm not feeling well, and I'm going like, well, maybe I'm going to be too sick to go. I mean, my system throws everything at me to prevent me from going, but I've made the decision. So now I have two choices. I'm going to say, I made the decision. Really, I expected this. I mean, I kind of expected this, but I didn't think it was going to be this intense. But thank God I have a partner who just looks at me and he says, babe, wow, your subconscious really does not want you to go. This is really intense. And he says, you just got to get clear that it's never going to be that bad when you actually do it. This is all the story stuff that we tell ourselves before we go. And I think that's what people need to get really clear on yourself, is that everybody has that. It's just people may not admit that, and certainly not on social media when we 10x, 5x, 2x, 20x, I mean, come on, people, get real. It's a journey with a path. You're going to get bruised. It's going to hurt. You're going to get cuts. People are going to hate you. People are going to say mean things to you. People are not going to buy from you. And you're going to keep looking until you find your way. Napoleon Hill is very clear about that.
Yeah, he is.
Decision is the decision.
Yeah, and that's what it always starts with, right? Like, because, and I kind of have the saying that I like to say to myself is that, Yesterday you said tomorrow. So you're always saying, okay, I'll get to this tomorrow, I'll get to this tomorrow, but like it'll never come until you actually do it. So you do have to, I do agree with you, you do have to make that conscious decision that you're just going to do something, right? Now, it might not get you to the mountaintop at that moment, but it'll put you on the path to getting there, right? So, I mean, I like the answer that you gave, and I think that kind of gives a good transition to the next thing I want to get into, which is more so the mindset aspect, right? Because you are someone that's known as the growth architect. So if you could kind of explain, just what that is for people who might not understand what a growth architect means.
Yeah, growth architect, the concept is pretty basic, is when you are building a house, you need a blueprint. And before you have the blueprint, you need a location. And before you have a location, you are going to need to understand how many people are going to be at your location. How many people are going to be living in this house? Are you going to be building a wood cabin, modern house, a three-story? Are you going to showcase that? Are you going to work from your home? What are you exactly building? And then you need a blueprint. But the blueprint of a house doesn't say you have to have a white porcelain sink. You can at any given time decide you want a blue sink. And even if you've built the white sink, you can still go and say, you know what? The white sink's not working for me. I want a blue sink. I don't care if you paint the walls blue, gray, green, yellow, as long as the blueprint is built, because then I know you can live in this house and then we fill it as it seems fit, as it works for you. That's what growth architecture is. It's a plan, a blueprint on how to build your house.
Yeah, okay, and I think that definitely makes sense. And throughout this conversation that I'm having with you, right, one of the things that I've observed is that A, you're someone who's very resilient, and B, you really do prioritize, decision making and really just thinking things through, right? And what also too, you did say something interesting. And it was about that, we're going to get cuts, we're going to get bruises. And these things happen, right? Oftentimes it can be, defined as failure, so to speak, right? But what I always find interesting about failure is that, in social settings, we always look at it as something negative, like, oh, you're a failure, you failed, right? But when you get into the personal development space and you make a conscious decision that you want to be successful. Failure is suddenly looked at something as positive, like it's a good thing. Like it means that you're putting yourself on the path to being successful, right? So when you hear the word failure, what are your thoughts about it? And the idea of failing your way to becoming successful. Like, what are your thoughts on that concept?
I think that everybody needs to fail as fast as they possibly can. And I tell the story when it goes around failure that you want to compare it to the car that you're driving with a GPS, and it keeps telling you that there's a system upgrade and you need to update the GPS. You're too busy because you got to go here, you got to drop the kids off, you got to get to work, you got to meet the client. You don't. And then one day, the shortcut under the freeway that you've always been taking is now blocked because the building, the on-ramp. So now you're going to stop the car. You're going to get out of the car. You're going to throw yourself on the pavement. You're going to say, I'm the worst driver in the world. That's it. I'm done driving forever. This is it. I cannot possibly manage such failure, like taking the wrong turn or not having known or not updating my GPS. This is a sign that I'm incapable of driving. I'm going to return the car. It's better not to have any payments. And who knows if the destination is even still there by the time I've sorted this all out. Just nobody. You just look at the guy in the hard hat and his cute little, neon green yellow suit with the reflective stripe and the stop sign. You wave at him and you make a note. Should be updating my GPS maybe next time a little bit sooner. You are absolutely convinced that the destination that you were going to is still there. It didn't vanish before because you took a wrong turn. You turn around and you find another way. And so, why can we do that? But then, when we take a wrong turn in business, we throw ourselves on the ground and we act like it's the end of the world. So, you have to have that really clear in your head and to say, I just eliminated a dead end. Find another way.
Yeah, that's a very good way of looking at it. And when you look at how far you've come, your present day now, and even towards the future, right? Do you have a specific principle or philosophy that you use as a compass to kind of help you navigate the different parts of life? Whether it be professionally, whether it be in business or even in your personal life, like you mentioned earlier, you're kind of entering new territory. Like, do you have a principle or philosophy that you apply that helps you navigate these different things?
I will not drown in a puddle. That's really it. I mean, I'm not gonna die by candlelight. I'm gonna die in a flaming inferno in a big fat ocean, not in a puddle. It's just not worth it. I think people make too much of a big deal around the small things. I've invested $5,000. $5,000 is nothing. One deal, you can make a multiple of that. But it hurts because who wants to lose $5,000? But you have to have a better attitude about this. And I think the philosophy is that the challenge of the philosophy for everybody, Yusuf, is always the same. Who am I? Why am I here? Am I doing the right thing? Is this going to lead me to something? And sometimes, as you are working on the goal, you realize that as you're working toward that goal, it wasn't that goal. It was something else. Slack was a messenger service within a video game. The video game didn't make it. Slack did.
Wow, I did not know that. Wow. And that's interesting. Like, it's interesting perspective, right? Because, like, even to the story of WhatsApp, I'm probably saying a little bit wrong, but I'm kind of paraphrasing here. But he was applying for jobs at Facebook and a bunch of other social media companies wouldn't get hired. But then Facebook buys it for billions, right? So that's very interesting. You will not drown in a puddle. I like that one.
And the headline is couldn't get a job.
Yeah.
So the headline is couldn't get a job for the life of it. But that dead end then led to the thing that led to the thing. And I think that people misunderstand that. I'm not going to make any quandaries around that. This part is the hardest part because when you're in it and you're out cold and it's dark and you're in the valley of despair. So if you look at the psychology of change, there is a valley of despair. So, so there's the enthusiasm when you decide you make the change, and then stuff just goes wrong. And then you end up in the valley of despair and you go like, that's it. It's not meant to be. I can't. You either stop or you push through. But the valley of despair is the deciding factor. And everybody I know who's become very successful has to fight their way through the valley of despair. You make it out of that one, you're good. But that's where 90% of people give up. Because it's too damn hard.
Yeah, it's a battle within you, right?
Oh my goodness. Truly.
You'll be the we will be our own toughest opponents that we'll ever face.
Fear. And the best thing that you can do is do the opposite of what everybody else does. So if everybody else is hating on each other, then be the one who loves. If everybody else stops advertising, be the one who advertises. If everybody is fearful, then be the one that has the courage, because that's how these times are best. These times are typically the biggest builder years. Like you'll look back at this and you say, this is where I made myself. When I, now when we look at my story, Yusuf, of how I was $135,000 in debt, single mom, immigrant, and all this stuff happens, and there was fires, floods, riots, earthquake, a tsunami. September 11th wiped out my business, a lawsuit where I lost $500,000. And it just kept coming. And people go like, well, aren't you going to give up yet? I mean, how much? I mean, you kind of like have every excuse on the planet now to give up. I mean, that's not normal. But I didn't. But then look at how my ship came in. So we ultimately make the decision. And I truly believe that the harder path, or the greater the hardship, or the greater the risk, or the greater the courage you need to come up with, the bigger the reward will be. But you have to have the stomach to make it through. And you may not, it will look many times like you're not making it. And even though I'm, in everybody's book, a successful person, I still have the same feelings over some of the things that I'm doing, because the next step is always bigger. I'm going to places I haven't been there before, because I'm still in my personal evolution and transformation. I'm doing just the same amount of praying and saying like, where do you want me to go? Where is my, am I best impacted? My daughter had a baby, so I'm a grandparent, which in itself is shocking. And how does this affect what matters to me now? Where do I want to spend my time? Do I want to continue working weekends like I've done for the last 40 years? I really don't. But does it affect my outcome, or does it just affect something else? And what is my belief system around that? I think that's my message really to everybody. It's like, you got to be very honest with yourself and aware of what you're actually doing. These are spiritual concepts. These are principles that rule the world. And in the world, there is no wait and see concept. There's no wait and see concepts in physics, in science, or in nature. There is no oak tree that says, you know what, Yusuf? Let's just agree on that. I'm going to do 100 leaves. Let's just do 100 leaves, okay? Right amount of leaves, I think. Then we see how people react to the leaves, if they like it. And over the next couple of months, I slowly roll out the remainder of my leaves. Well, that's really idiotic, isn't it? Because it's spring, the tree needs to sprout. The tree just sprouts. There is no wait and see. There's no squirrel that says, you know, I'm not so sure there's going to be a winter this year. Or maybe the winter's not going to be harsh enough, and maybe there's not going to be any snow. I'm just going to wait and see how things unfold. And then if I see that there's going to be a winter coming, because I'm not sure, then I'm going to prepare for the winter. Because by that time it's too late. So there is no wait and see concept. That's a thing that humans have perfected. And so if that's you, and you've been waiting and seeing for years and years and years and years and years, here's, I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. First thing I want you to do is I want you to go to the quiz we just created. And I literally am finishing this as at the time of this interview. Because I was thinking about this, how am I going to tell people that it's time for them to stop waiting? And I said, if I tell them what they can actually earn with their skill, not in this internet marketing 5x, 10x, 4-hour work week, I leave this to the other guys. But what if I take their numbers and their experience, and I'll create a mathematical formula and I'll calculate it for them? So I did that. So I launched the quiz. It's where it's it, you can find it at whatsyourtalentworth.com. Whatsyourtalentworth.com. Very easy to remember. And take that quiz and it'll give you a number. And now you're going to look at a number that gives you your actual realistic earning potential, depending on how much years of experience you have, the scarcity. There's a couple, five factors that play into this. And then you're going to look probably at a number between 150 and $750,000. And then my next question to you is, what are you going to do about that? You're going to wait and see? Those are not my numbers. Those are your numbers. So if you yourself then know that's the number you can make based on these current market conditions, what's your excuse? And that's kind of where I am. I think that's where my role is really shifting toward right now, is to provide the swift kick in the arse, if you really want to know it.
And I'm feeling it already after this episode. Like, I'm actually curious. I want to take that quiz myself.
You should. And I'm curious to see what the number is.
No,
Because
probably.
then when that number, that's your number. I didn't give you those numbers. You, that's your number. And then that number stares you in the face. What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to reach out to you and tell you the number. That's the first thing.
Yeah. Please do. Please
And
do.
then I'm going to figure out how to attain that number. But
Exactly.
And congratulations on becoming a grandmother, by the way, Beate. That's I can only imagine, the kind of feeling that is. But it's just so interesting to hear, like, because I think what you're kind of defining is imposter syndrome, right? And I know that's a very common thing, especially when you're starting out and going through your journey. But for someone such as yourself to still be dealing with it, like, it goes to show that it's not an end goal. It's an ongoing battle. So it's
That's why I don't think we should call it imposter syndrome, because imposter syndrome gives it an out. What it is, it's the opportunity that's in front of you. And if you say, I have imposter syndrome, then you can say, well, I know I can do it, but it's the external circumstances and my weakness. What kind of excuse is that? So wait, so you know you can, and that's why I did the quiz. Because I wanted irrefutable evidence that what you want is right there. And then what are you going to say? You say, well, I have the number. This is kind of what I was thinking. I have it confirmed. Confirmed. And now I'm going to choose to do nothing, because even though I now know that I can achieve this number, I choose not to do this. Because then the next thing that we're going to do is we're going to tell you exactly how to achieve that number, because that's the program that we built. And we had a program that I built years and years and years ago. And it's my best-selling program. We had over 22,000 people that had taken this program. I did with a partner, and I did this. And sometimes interesting use of how these things work. I did this with a partner because I didn't want to be on the low level. I want to be on the high level part of the business. I want to do the high ticket sales and all that. And it just kept stopping. It was so bumpy. And I'm like, why is this not? What is going on? Then I thought about it. And I'm like, but I know how to build business. And then when I build them, I can grow them and I can scale them. Maybe I'm missing that entire first step. And then we went back to this first step and I looked at it and I built a whole 12-week program. And again, it's all based on market conditions. Turn your talent into a business. What do you need? You need six modules to tell you what to do, and then you need six modules on how to do it. And then you have your number, and in 12 weeks from now, you could have that model all flushed out. So I wanted to be the excuse eradicator. Have the number. The path is there. It's a completely affordable. It's not a high ticket item. So now what? What excuse are you going to have now? Would it be valuable if somebody says, I can make $775,000, which this one gentleman did, and it's an accurate number for him. And then he invested in the $3,000 program, because $3,000 to have a plan to make $775,000 seems like a pretty good ROI to me.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that's how you have to think about it. But then there's no guarantees. The only guarantee you have is what you're gonna do. And I think that's where I am right now in sort of these transformations. There's always an amount of anger or frustration, because you go like, I did all of this work to get there, and now I had to take another hard turn again. Why? Well, because market conditions require me to do that. But is it a market that I understand probably better than anybody else? The comeback story? I mean, that is my story 13 times over. I know this better than most people. So we'll see.
Yeah, Beate, I could probably talk to you all day about this, because there's so many different layers and directions the conversation could go. But I think we've covered many great things. I definitely think that you shed a lot of light on important topics that people will listen to and appreciate. And I personally want to thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you, and how can they connect with you?
Yeah, so of course you're all going to go and take the quiz now at whatsyourtalentworth.com. Look me up under Growth Architect or Beate Chalette. The website's growtharchitect.xyz. And if you've heard something and you say, I really, really need to speak to her, go to uncoverysession.com. Make sure you mention this podcast so we can get you priority treatment. And while we are at it, please will you do us a favor? Go wherever you pick up this podcast, give this podcast a 5-star review and write a little comment. Comments are really, really critical for the engagement piece. It tells people that this is a valuable podcast, and then share this with one other person that needs to hear what we have talked about today. Drop into my DM, say hello, share what you've taken away from this podcast. We are all in this to help each other.
Perfect. Yeah, and I'll make sure I link everything in the description of the episode as well, so people will be able to find it. But Beate, thank you so much for being part of the show. It's great having you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care until next time.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.